This is Calliope Writing Coach, the podcast about writing and publishing success from every angle. I'm Angie Fenimore, international best-selling author and writing coach.
And I'm Michael Sheen, author, platform designer, and marketing master. Episode 29, Doing What Must Be Done. Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Calliope Writing Coach Podcast. You got Michael and Angie in the house.
Good morning.
Good morning. And today our special guest is Mr. Chad Hymus. Welcome, Chad.
Morning, guys. Thank you.
Let me tell you a little bit about Chad. On April 3rd, 2001, Chad was involved in a serious accident, leaving him a quadriplegic. But Chad's dreams were not paralyzed that day. He's definitely kept himself busy. The Wall Street Journal calls Chad Hymus one of the 10 most inspirational people in the world. Last year, Chad spoke at 220 different events, traveling just over 300,000 miles and speaking on five continents and in four countries. Chad has shared his personal message and entertained many audiences from organizations such as Wells Fargo, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Ford, IHC, Coca-Cola, and the Utah Jazz. He has raced in marathons and in the summer of 2003 set a world record by wheeling his chair from Salt Lake City to Las Vegas, which is 513 miles. Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
Chad, very crazy. Very, very crazy.
Chad participates in other wheelchair athletic competitions, including basketball, rugby, and officiating basketball, a dream come true. He spends many hours with other injured individuals in therapy, encouraging them to overcome their challenges, focus on dreams, and make them a reality, and love life for all that it has to offer, to achieve the unachievable and to reach for the unreachable. Chad's greatest accomplishment is that he remains a devoted husband to his loving wife, Shondell, and a proud father to their three children, Christian, Kyler, and Gracie. Welcome, Chad. It is such an honor to have you.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Michael, Angie, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So, Chad, obviously your journey began with your accident. Tell us a little bit about that.
I think the journey began prior to that, with all due respect, Michael. My journey has always been to live on a ranch and be a guide, a hunting guide. So that's where the journey began. And so Shondell and I moved out in the rural areas of Salt Lake City, about an hour out of Salt Lake, into a small community and started building our dream there. And long story short, I was injured in an accident while building that dream.
Oh. And so
I had a bale of hay that fell off the tractor I was driving, a bale that weighs more than most SUV vehicles, and that landed directly on my head, punched the head through the steering column, and that's what broke the vertebrae in my neck and severing 95% of my spinal cord. Mm. So that rendered me numb in all four limbs and 95% of my body. So since that time, that's been 17 years, I had some decisions to make, obviously. I don't know how in depth we're going to get into that today, but bottom line short is in the last 17 years, I have made it to 52 countries and shared a message, published six books, and instead of farming elk and cattle and horses, which we still do with our sons that are now older. Our boys were 3 and 1 when I broke my neck. They're now 20 and 18. Mm-hmm. I now farm people worldwide. And so it's I've learned that I don't have to wear cowboy boots or Wranglers to be a farmer. Today I ride an airplane instead of a horse, and I love riding. Absolutely love riding. And so with that said, that's where the journey is taking us, has taken us in 17 years.
Excellent. Well, you know, your story is certainly inspiring. And, you know, I absolutely do agree that your journey began well before the accident because of, you know, your reaction to that happening. You know, I mean, so many people would say that would just give you license to lie around for the rest of your life. You know, oh, poor Chad, you know, wow, that's such a tragedy, right? But, you know, you have certainly taken that well beyond what anybody else expected of you, I would guess.
I don't want to give false impression or false hope. I did lie around and found that Judge Judy was very addictive. I never had a sense of fulfillment. It was depression and suicide. Mm-hmm. I know these are strong words, but I think that beating around those words is a mistake for our audience.
And I'm a suicide survivor, actually.
Great.
Yeah.
Those words. And I don't think it's a mistake in doing so. So I never found suicide and depression to be the results that I had aimed for prior. And so it was either to go down that path and choose that path, suicide and depression, or make some changes that would alter that course. And, you know, as many motivational speakers as we hear, the really only motivational in each of our lives is ourselves, because we have to make those choices when the motivational speaker leaves, or when the sermon is, when somebody says amen. We leave the church house, we leave the hotel after the hearing a motivational message, and we have to act on that. Mm-hmm. And I learned that very, very quick in my mindset, in my rehabilitation process. I was either going to keep down this path, get divorced, end up in a group home and eat a bunch of pills and die, or I had to find new purpose, new fulfillment, and change some belief systems. I didn't say change values. That will never change.
Right.
But I had to change belief systems. And so mm-hmm. that has taken me to places I never, ever dreamed of. And that's where we are today. That's what I talked about today.
Did you have a moment? Do you remember having a moment where you made that choice? Because I, you know, something that I teach is that belief is more powerful than fact. Belief runs the show.
For sure. I mean, belief dictates your actions, and actions dictate the results that you mm-hmm. get. So
yeah.
If I believe that I'm going to be paralyzed the rest of my life and believe that I'm going to not be able to court my spouse, then my actions are going to dictate anger towards her, and the result will be divorce. I'm just telling you exactly how I see it. It's mm-hmm. how I see it in my mind. So if I'm willing to change my belief system and say, you know what, I do have value. I can tickle her back with a pencil in my mouth. I can teach the kids how to play basketball on a 3-foot hoop with a Nerf ball. Then that will dictate my actions. I'll get out on the cement court. I'll teach them on a 3-foot hoop, and I'll be present at their games, and I'll be the best darn dad that I can. And then the results speak for themselves. I am closer to my boys than I've ever been before. We have adopted Gracie, and something that you did not mention in your introduction, which is not a problem because he's brand new. We just got our fourth child within the last few months. He's 8 years old from Ethiopia. And he just celebrated his first Christmas, recently. And it's been things have changed. So we now have four children, and it's you know, Angie's right. Belief totally trumps facts, and I couldn't agree with you more.
Well, and I'm glad to hear you say that you did go through it. You did go through the depths of despair with this, because I think, you know, so many times we meet people who have just horrific pasts, and, you know, they look at somebody like you who is now a motivational speaker traveling the world, and they think, you know, that could never be me. And it is just a mindset that creates that opportunity.
Well, and then when you ignore, you know, the process to get there, which includes going to the depths of hell, you know, every story must include that if there's going to be a triumph anyway. And, you know, it has people be, it would have you be unrelatable, you know? And if you're unrelatable, you can't actually motivate or encourage people to triumph, you know?
It limits credibility, right, Angie? Mm-hmm. I think it takes for me to just say, hey, you know, yeah, I was great from the get-go. I had a good attitude. I think that tears me away from most that go through any kind of tragedy. And you don't have to be paralyzed or break your neck physically to be paralyzed.
Oh, no.
And
yeah.
It travels. I've met people that can walk that are more paralyzed than I will ever be in my lifetime. So I have to be credible to them. And it doesn't come from a broken neck. It comes from me being not walking in their path, but putting myself on their level. That's what gives me credibility. I don't have to say one word about my accident in any speech. I don't even have to write about it in a book. Instantly, a picture gives me credibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't have to say one word about it. I don't have to talk about it. I can talk about other principles of life, but that just gives me credit. And the same holds true for anybody. Not necessarily having a picture give you credibility, but I just think that people talk a lot without having any credibility in their tank.
Mm-hmm. An image is the shortest pitch, actually.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's a great pitch. How good would this story be today if we were to mention all these good things, and then I were to tell you, to be honest with the group, on the 17th of next month, Shondell and I's divorce will be final. After 18 years of travel, it's finally taken its toll. What just happened to my credibility, Angie?
Right.
Toilet.
Exactly.
I'm not here to talk about marriage. And the truth is, Shondell and I are not getting divorced. I'm just saying, I dang well better do the best that I can to live what I teach, realizing that I'm not going to be perfect. I'm going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And I want our audience to realize
yeah.
that.
Yeah, it's walk the talk or wheel the deal, yeah. whatever, however you want to say it, you know.
Make daily progress.
Exactly.
But yeah. make daily progress.
Yeah. So speaking of your writing, I know what talk about your books. You know, what have you written? What has it done for you? And what has that provided for others?
Not what I thought, because I didn't like to write 5 years ago. And I'm your untypical author. I didn't go with a major publisher. I spoke before I ever wrote anything. And most do the opposite. Most have a book that gives them some sort of credibility. I went the opposite path. People kept asking for my book. Where is mm-hmm. this? And where's this product? And I just kept putting it off and putting it off. And I just didn't want to write. Writing was not my thing. I didn't like to write. I didn't like to read. I ended up sitting down with a ghostwriter. We brought the book to fruition in about a 8-month time frame, and we launched it on October the 1st of 2008. Now, here was the goal with my staff. This was a self-published book. I had it printed at the local print shop in the town where I live, soft cover, 183 pages with pictures. And teaching principles that I've been talking about for the last 10 years at that point. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I bought 10,000 copies, and here was the goal. By Christmas of that year, by December 23rd, I wanted to have as many books sold as we could, with my goal being maybe a couple thousand with past clients. And I would give the office staff, that consisted of three gals in the office, a quarter a book sold. And I wouldn't discriminate or differentiate who sold what. So it takes a team effort, and I would just give a quarter each to each person for every book that they sold. And that was their incentive to get the books out in the market, because I didn't want to have a garage full of pallets of books.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so by the end of that time frame, October 1st to December 31st, they had sold 728,000 copies of the book.
Oh, my gosh.
And they had sold 3 million copies within
what?
The next year. So that is, I'm going to say, that changed everything in that.
Oh, you bet.
Well, first of all, got gals in the office that are making a higher bonus than most executive assistants make. So I hired a financial consultant to come talk to the office about my belief system, values of giving and saving and what do you do with college funds? So that was a piece. Another piece is I did not go the route of having somebody else do all of my shipping. I have a couple high school girls that come in and help these ladies out every day after high school's over, and we built a new building. And so that building houses about 200,000 books of each of our books. We now have 5 at a time, and then 6 DVDs that have been done, and they ship every day. Mm-hmm. And that's so we do it all in-house on the ranch. So the ranch also has now an office attached to it where everybody has their setup. So I never thought of that. That wasn't part of the plan. The plan was for me to sell 2,500 books.
Yeah.
So there's a there. I think when it comes to writing, and when it comes to, I don't think there's any special way to do it. I think that sometimes going to New York and trying to get into one of the big 7, I'm not saying it's a mistake. I'm just saying it doesn't have to be done that way.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
It does not. And who do we sell to? We sold to all of my past clients the prior 10 years.
Yeah.
And now here, 7 years later, so 10 plus 7, 17, we pre-sell those books at a discounted rate, because I want everybody to take home a copy of the book or the Oprah Winfrey DVD or whatever DVD they want. I'll give them a discount, and I still pay a quarter each of those products as a bonus to the staff for being a part of that. I'm not taking that away from them.
Oh, that's wow. So great.
That's incredible. So
that's a non-typical way of... That story has been shared many times in within the National Speakers Association and within NSA Mountain West chapter in Utah. That's just an example of doing it non-typical, and I did not plan that. That was not our strategy. That's very important for you to know. It's amazing what happens when somebody else believes in you and you don't believe in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And those girls did that. I call them girls, but those women in the office, they did that, and they did an amazing job. And they continue to do that. And you're only as good as the people you surround yourself by. So I think writing is valuable, because when you go speak, people forget what you say. They remember how you make them feel. Mm-hmm. A book allows them to feel that over and over again when they want to read certain parts.
Right. Exactly as if you just wrote those words right then. They're experiencing it 20 years later sometimes, you know, or longer. My sister just got a first edition Pride and Prejudice as a gift.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like hundreds of years later, sometimes you can impact people, you know?
In my book, I write about a story, a girl that we made fun of in high school. And my dad came into the high school as he had heard us, the basketball team, talking the night before. Prior to a game, I had a team over and we were having spaghetti dinner. We were all downstairs in the room and we were making fun of this girl. We were cracking jokes about her drool and the way that she dropped ketchup and applesauce on her bib. And the next day of school, on game day, my dad would show up and in front of 3,500 kids in Salt Lake City, Utah, unannounced, uninvited, and walked into that cafeteria. And he didn't come there to discipline me. He just simply came in and asked the team to follow him. And we went over and sat by Melanie. And for 30 minutes, we got to know her. We found out about her drool. We found out about why she wears a bib. My dad made the whole conversation about her. And here's the most important piece. My dad wasn't wearing a microphone. No one could hear him talk. But everybody is watching the jocks of the high school sitting at the... I'm sorry for saying this word. The retarded table. That's what we called it. We were sitting at the retarded table and we fell in love with her.
Yeah.
Because she made us happy. Now, 8 days later, something happened to her. 8 days later. So after our 30-minute encounter with Melanie Bronis, 8 days later, she was voted. 8 days later, this girl that we made fun of was voted by the populace of the high school, the head cheerleader. So they duct taped a pom-pom to her hand. The other hand was used to rotate the wheelchair in a circle, and she was in the middle, and she just twirled in a circle. Now, here's the best part. Just like this ties in with Angie right here. Just last year, my son, who's 20 years old, or 19 at the time, his senior year, is reading Dad's book. I mean, who had ever thought that? He's reading my book. And he reads the story of Melanie. And he goes to his school. I got pictures of this. And he and his younger sophomore brother, that both start varsity together, they do something bigger than their dad. They go to the special ed class, and they ask two special ed students to homecoming. Now, here's the best part. Six of their buddies on the team thought it was cool. Not all 12, but six of them. Eight of their football buddies. Not all 90 of them, but eight of them did. And all 16 cheerleaders bought in. I got pictures of this stuff that I share. So 48 kids went to homecoming. All that happened last year. 48 kids go. The entire special ed department goes, all because of how many people?
Well, just, I mean, your son reading that book, right?
Michael, think back.
Dad.
Yeah.
My dad did not have to write the story.
Right.
That's the power of writing.
Yeah, exactly.
And you nailed it. So 20 years later, this kid reads and is inspired to go do some good for somebody else. Had my dad not done that and created the story, it would have never been written, and the girls would have never been asked, and 48 kids would not have benefited from that.
No kidding.
That is the power of writing. Even though it is difficult and even though the people don't like it, that is, if you do nothing else, you write those stories for other people to benefit. That's the legacy you leave behind. Mm-hmm. You're no longer able to speak from your mouth when you're taken from this life. When it's your time to stop, the writing is still there. That is the power of writing.
You know, I had an experience about 10 years ago. A gal who I didn't know her. She'd read my book. She had, you know, was a fan, but she was kind of a bulldozer in her life. And I think she had some mental issues as well. But anyway, I knew her sister-in-law really well. And I was over at her sister-in-law, my friend's house, cooking dinner. This gal drove all the way up from Price because I was going to be there. She wanted to meet me. And I had heard all this garbage in the background about, you know, what a bulldozer she was and how she walked on people. And so I was just cooking. And then my friend's husband came and got me. And she says, she came all the way here just to meet you. I'm taking over. You go talk to her. And I sat with this girl and just listened, because I have an agreement with myself. And that is no judgment, just listen. And, you know, we sat and visited for about an hour. Well, she went home. and she got in communication with everybody in her life, and she cleaned up. She like took responsibility for everything she had done, and then she rolled. Her car rolled, I don't know, like 6 times, and she had her baby in the car. Baby was like catapulted from the car, not a scratch on him, and she died. And so it was my friend and I that actually had to go get the baby from the hospital and drive the baby all the way back down to the rest of the family in Price. And when I walked in, the whole family started whispering, looking at me and whispering, that's her, that's her, that's her, that's her. And it was because I put down my judgment, like the possibility of judging, and had this conversation with this girl that she made peace with everyone before she left this world, you know?
Wow. That's powerful, Angie.
It is. Awesome. And it's just like from writing down the story and being authentic, telling the truth, being straight, you know, because we're all dealing with it in one way or another. You don't get through this life without dealing with it. And, you know, sometimes we like to pretend we've got it together because that's more comfortable. But, you know, we really are our brothers and sisters keepers, you know?
Right. You're spot on.
And Chad, one of the things that I want to point out too is your method of storytelling is fantastic. One of the things that I think people think when they're telling their story, they need to leave out the bad parts and just skip ahead to the good parts. And in your story about this young lady, you know, you talk about how you made fun of her. You and your friends were making fun of her. And what I want to point out is that when you are telling that story to an audience, people then can see themselves in that.
Yeah.
And then they can move forward with you in that conversation, where if you just skip ahead to the good part where she was voted, you know, head cheerleader, then nobody gets to come along that journey with you. So you do have to tell all the gritty details.
Yeah, and
of
who hasn't
stories.
Been in the crosshairs and who hasn't been, you know, pointing the gun in their life at one time or another, right?
It makes you unreachable, Michael, right? It makes you, you're on the same level. You're on the same. Anytime you speak above your audience, they can't relate to that. You'll lose them quickly. Even in writing, you must speak to and with your audience. You have to be on the same level. I always tell people, don't walk on their shoes. Put yourself on their level when you're writing. It gives you more credibility. It makes you more relatable. People can't necessarily relate to a broken neck and being paralyzed. But when I start talking about suicide or divorce or drug addiction or whatever the barricades might be in their life or the loss of a spouse, now we can talk about some of the things that have helped me to get through my experience of being numb and their experience of having an addiction or a troubled teenager or an aging parent.
Right.
Now we can talk. Now we can talk about how to find success and joy in life without having them have them, you know, I only speak to people that are numb groups. You know what I'm saying? I think Angie nailed it, and we have to share those bad parts because it gives us credibility in the bank account. I mean, how much credibility is in your tank? And if we don't mention those parts and just mention the good parts, it makes us a step above them, and you'll never relate to an audience that
way. Exactly.
Right? Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you know, congratulations on selling 3 million books. And, you know, it's definitely a credit to your office staff.
Yeah, you should have seen Michael and I. our eyes just got huge and we're just like looking at each other.
But I think
incredible.
I don't mean that arrogantly.
No. The bigger part of that, Chad, is that the message that you're sharing.
And how many people you're reaching.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what made those books sell. And certainly having staff to help you out with shipping and all that kind of thing helped, but it was the message that sold that story and the others that have come after it. So tell us a little bit more about the other books that you've written. Which one's your favorite?
And if you have anything in the works too.
I have several. I mean, when I said I have several, we have a half a dozen books. So Doing What Must Be Done is the big bestseller. And I say bestseller in our own words because now we're up to, I think, 6.5 million copies sold of that book. That's one that sold the most. That's the biggest. That's got the Shondell's version, and that's the one that the office staff has sold. But I like the little pocket books. I like the you know, where people can read in 20 minutes. I got this thing knocked out, and I got some nuggets from that immediately they can take away and implement. So I like what I would call a pocket book. Mm-hmm. In order to find out more information on that, I got the idea from an NSA member who created a bunch of several pocketbooks. Nito Cobain also does this. Mark LeBlanc is the one that shared the idea. If you look up Mark LeBlanc, they're probably 40 pages long. They fit in your what's that pocket called on your
there
shirt?
There you go, shirt pocket.
Shirt pocket.
Pocket. They fit in your shirt pocket. It's a pocketbook, and I think there's a lot of good nuggets that can be shared, daily messages in those little pocketbooks, that even if you write a series of them, anybody can do that. And then you sell them that way. There's another website that I love to look at where I've got the whole set. It's called simpletruths.com. And I love those small books. Now, those are bigger than a book that fits in your pocket, but they are quick reads with great messages. And I've got the whole series in my office here that I look at and I pull them out. If I want to get some good me time, I'll read one of those books and I'll get it done in 20 minutes in the morning. And it's not about getting it done. It's about, all right, that's going to set the tone for the day today. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love about those books. And so there are several different ways. You don't have to go write a novel to have something to sell or something to share with people.
I love that idea because, you know, so many times people think that it has to be 300 pages, and that is a daunting task.
Which is what the traditional publishing industry, you know, they're very, very clear about what they want for word count for every genre. You know, so sometimes the message doesn't get read, especially in self-help, if it's the link that a traditional publisher is expecting or wants, you know.
No, I think, yeah, absolutely right, for sure.
Excellent. So you've had some amazing experiences since your speaking career began. Is there one or two that maybe stand out?
Oh, you know, I think speaking for the Dallas Mavericks this last September was cool. You mentioned the Utah Jazz, but I don't know how to share this. I mean, so I got pictures of me speaking to the team. It's a moment that I'll never forget, you know, not just Mark Cuban and some big names and Dirk, and basketball is our favorite sport. But here's the deal. I'll just share with you the way I see it. You know, after I was done speaking to the team, which had nothing to do with my paralysis, they're trying to accomplish some goals that with a very, very young team. They're not the biggest of goals, but they're incremental goals. And that's what Mark Cuban wanted me to talk about with the team in the locker room. So I had an hour with the team before preseason game against the Cavaliers. Mm-hmm. So that's how it went. Now here's the best part. So after I'm done, Dirk, who he's number 41, been in the NBA for 21 years and an all-star for 14 of the 21. So the guy's got game, and he's made Mark Cuban hundreds of millions of dollars. So this guy is a success story. Now here's the special part. He presents me with the ball that the whole team has signed. So that's all well and good. That's nice. Here's the cool part. You know, I've read a story, Michael and Angie, about a lady that gets her hair wet and she washes off a guy's feet. Now, I'm not here to talk about that story, and I don't even care if people believe the story or not. That's not my point. I just think it's pretty cool that a lady gets her hair wet in the story and washes off a guy's feet. Mm-hmm. Apparently, she must be trying to convey some sort of respect. I mean, what would compel Angie to get her hair wet and wash off somebody's feet? She must have some sort of respect, admiration, love. That's all she can give. Whatever it is, there would be something that would compel her to do that.
And the vulnerability there too, you know. Right.
Yes. So let's go back to the Mavericks. I've never had somebody wash my feet with their hair, but this guy, 7'4", took off his shoes. I never asked him for that. And he signed them, and he asked me to take care of them. Mm-hmm. Now, they were hard for me to get my suitcase because they're size 18. Mm-hmm. But I did bring it back to my office, and then it went a step further. I have pictures of that, but I don't have pictures of what you're about to hear. After I'm done, I'm going to catch my flight to the next city. Now, the team parks behind the arena. Any idea as to why Dirk and 12 other players park behind the arena in a security type setting? Why would they park behind the arena?
Just to be, you know, secluded, I guess, to...
Right.
Know, yeah.
Right. Yeah, and be out of the public eye and not have to... And they all drive nice cars.
Yeah.
But my car is coming to pick me up out in the front. And so I've got an SUV coming to pick me up. So I wheel my chair out there. A couple trainers got my bags, and they're going to help me get up into this SUV because I can't get up in this SUV by myself. I'm paralyzed. And so I keep my weight under 150 for that reason. So these guys go to lift me up, and we hear this voice from back coming out of the arena that says, "I got this." Who do you think that was?
That was your new friend.
That was the 7'4" guy. And the trainers are scrambling. They don't want Dirk to do this. And there's a reason why. It's I'm not offended by it. I totally understand it. Why would they not want Dirk to help me lift me up into this Suburban?
Well, I would imagine you're in front of the stadium there.
That's so. And you're thinking public image.
Public image, yeah.
Okay, so that's I have never thought about that before, Angie. But that's got to be probably a reason why they don't want him to be seen doing it. But here's their reason that was mentioned: it's injury. He's been playing for 21 years. It's liability, and he is their best player, and they don't want him to get hurt before they start the season. They don't want him to. So they're saying, you know what, Dirk, we got this. You just stay with your routine. And Dirk says some things that I probably should not repeat on this podcast. And when Dirk says those words, you back off.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy lifted me up. It happened all so fast, Michael. There's no pictures. I have no proof other than the words coming out of my mouth and the words that I recorded that day by writing.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, there are no pictures of the lady washing the guy's feet either.
Nope.
Right, right.
But there are words written down.
Yeah.
And that's what I've done. And that's, I think, the message that you guys do so well, that you're trying to help people convey, is the power of words in the written format. And so that's why I quickly had to go write how I was feeling, what just happened. Whether or not people believe it, that's fine. People don't believe the story about the lady. That's fine. But it does make one think about the lady, true or false, what she must have been trying to convey. And whether or not people believe me when I talk about Dirk lifting me up, that's fine. But I know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I was a recipient, and I know how I felt. I think I felt like the guy who had his feet washed. That's how I felt.
You know, and think how long ago that story was written.
Right.
Think about how long. It impacts people now.
Right. Angie, you're so right. You are so right. Perfect.
Yeah. Well, that is, certainly incredible.
You asked my memorable moments. That was your question, Michael. I don't want to stick from that, but that one just happened within the last couple of months, and that one sticks out. And I hope it's okay that I shared that.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that, you know, so many times we think about service to others and, you know, all of these amazing stories. I mean, you've met some amazing people, and the one that stands out that you just told us is somebody who gave you service after you've served so many for so many years. You know, with Dirk just taking the time to serve you and lift you up into that SUV, that's what stands out. And man, we, you know, with our writers groups, we put together service projects.
We do, because service is the balm of Gilead. And
say that again.
Service is the balm of Gilead.
Just writing that down. I'm going to take credit for that in my next talk.
That's awesome. Awesome.
Hashtag.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing that we love to do is we go into addiction recovery facilities and we teach writing for recovery.
Like Steps Recovery Heritage. Those are the coolest venues, because those people have credibility and they're overcoming obstacles that most can't believe they can't overcome when they can.
Exactly.
You're absolutely right.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's amazing, and you know, it's one of the things that I teach as you're building your author platform is to get involved and serve others. And then all of a sudden, you know, people are wondering, well, what do I blog about? What do I talk about?
Connect up to what you're committed to. Find what you're committed to, because deep down inside of all human beings, we just want to make a difference. And that can get thwarted, which is how you get people that do some of the things that they do that are unspeakable. But really connect up to, how can you make a difference? And you're just like such a shining example of that. And you make such a difference for others in being an example of that, because it's such a, you know, it's such a powerful way to heal.
I'm humbled by your words, Angie. Thank you. I am. I don't ever want to be looked at by that, but to tell you that it doesn't make me feel like I have purpose to be alive. It's the driving force behind me traveling the way that I do. I'm not saying that again in an arrogant or a bragging way, but what you just said is why I feel compelled. There's not enough time in my day to do what I do because of the kind gestures. I can't. It's the drug that I need.
Mm-hmm.
I've been good for. I need that drug. That's the drug of choice.
Well, Chad, what greater purpose is there really?
Well, you and I believe that, but others, if they could find that, they would find so much more fulfillment, because I used to have a different drug. The other drug was the medication that kind of made me not realize what I was going through, and Judge Judy and sitting down and watching James Bond over and over and over again. I'm not against James Bond. I'm just saying, you know, it wasn't fulfilling. I still watch it from time to time, but not to where he consumes. I got to find a place to, I got to stay busy. I got to keep moving. I got to, in this paralyzed frame, I have to, I mean, I'm out here in my office, Shondell's in the house with the kids, and we're, as soon as we're done, we're going to see, I think we have two movies on the slate and Spaghetti Factory tonight. That's the plan.
Nice. So
I can't, the day has to be full. We got to get things done.
Well, when you change your actions, that's when you change your beliefs. So you don't even have to believe. You just have to take an action consistent with something that matters to you, and the beliefs start to change.
That's right. That's right.
Well, Chad, it has certainly been an honor talking with you today.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you.
Such a privilege.
And thank you for what you've given your life to and the lives that you've changed. And thank you for your words of inspiration on this show today. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, you guys. I really appreciate it. I'm honored.
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to subscribe so that you get each new episode as it comes out. You can find all of our episodes and show notes at calliopepodcast.com. Don't forget to shoot some stars our way if you like the show.
Hey, I'm glad you're still here. I wanted to take just a second to tell you what we've been working on. You know, we've talked a lot about our live courses on the podcast before, and, you know, they are incredible, but it's not always possible to make it to a live course. So for the last year, Angie and I have been working hard to package what we teach in our live courses into an online course that you can participate in from anywhere. The Submission Possible series is a 12-part course that covers everything you need to write, edit, and market your story. There really is nothing like it out there, and we would love for you to check it out. In fact, we want to give you session one for free. Now, there's a link on our website at calliopewritingcoach.com. Just click on the yellow banner there and keep writing.